Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 44 degrees in light rain. Today's Wednesday, June 13th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A fishing derby to promote lodges in Elfin Cove has been canceled. The Sea King 2012 Derby would have cost $400 to enter, with a grand prize of $100,000 depending on sales. The problem is that in Alaska, only nonprofit organizations can operate gambling enterprises. Elfin Cove Lodge's Donna Forte says there was no bad intent. She says sponsors hope to raise $200,000 in entry fees. She says that after expenses of about $40,000, an estimated $60,000 would have been left for charity. She says the derby, which was to promote Icy Strait businesses, has been canceled. Several other lodges were also sponsors. Next year's city budget is a done deal. At its regular meeting last night, the Sitka Assembly approved a plan that includes a $27 million general fund. The original budget submitted by city staff included two layoffs. Those were avoided when Assembly members added the funding back in at earlier meetings, but cuts still exist to several departments. The list of cuts includes a $500,000 computer network in City Hall, $250,000 for two vacant police positions, and $17,000 for street repairs. Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett protested cuts to city funding toward nonprofit organizations. She said she'll probably bring the matter up at a future meeting. Hackett and Pete Esquiro were the only votes against the budget. Esquiro said he voted no in part because he objected to the Assembly restoring funding that had been cut in the budget's first draft. The 2013 budget takes effect July 1st. It is balanced, but the city is not out of the financial woods. Assembly members continue to look for ways to raise more money, and that is where KCAW's Ed Ronco picks up the story.
Still on the assembly table is a measure to raise Sitka's sales tax cap. Right now, sales taxes are only charged for the first $1,000 of a purchase. A measure advanced Tuesday night would change that to $1,500. That is substantially lower than the amount originally proposed earlier this spring. But
we got beat on until we gave in to
Assemblymember Tor Christensen there. He's talking about the backlash against raising the cap to as much as $5,000. At earlier meetings, business owners said raising the cap would make it difficult to sell big-ticket items to cruise visitors. Charter operators said it would make business harder for them to conduct. And other tour operators asked for a later effective date. They argued that imposing the hike in the middle of the summer would screw up existing reservations. So the assembly made changes. The tax cap would be set at $1,500 and would not be effective until October 1st. We say would not because the ordinance still needs another reading before it's finalized. City Finance Director Jay Sweeney said with the October start date, the higher tax cap would be in place 9 months of its first year and would raise about $500,000.
And if you're looking at a full year, you're looking at roughly $900,000. I would caution again, though, that when you're asking me these numbers, there is no way to make anything more than a speculative guess ahead of time. We've been consistent on that point.
Figuring out how much money could be raised by a change in the tax cap would require knowing how consumers will behave. Will people replace their TVs this year? Or buy valuable pieces of artwork from local galleries? Or book tours with local guides?
And so I would think you would have to attach a large margin of error to those estimates. But I think that's within the realm of possibility, the numbers I gave you.
Mayor Cheryl Westover said she would be careful about counting on the money in future budgets. As an example, she cited a $10 tax on fish boxes that the city imposed a few years ago.
It was guesstimated it was going to bring in $800,000. It never came close, so I would caution us to not be counting our chickens before they hatch.
So the city might not want to count its chickens, but it is trying to build up some nest eggs. One of those is a fund to repair municipal roads. The money would come from a city motor vehicle registration tax. Under that proposal, Sitkins would pay a tax on their vehicles every other year, beginning in 2014. For non-commercial vehicles, like a family car, that would be $200. Motorcycles and trailers are cheaper, and commercial vehicles are more expensive, about $400. The money would go toward road maintenance and repairs, as well as related infrastructure like sidewalks and bike lanes. The Assembly had hoped to discuss that idea at its meeting on Tuesday, but it ran out of time. The item is expected to come up at the next regular meeting on June 26th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
When you think of food in Southeast Alaska, you might think of king salmon or moose. Farming is not really our forte, but some Alaskans are trying to change that, at least on a small scale. Here in Sitka, you can find two large transparent plastic tunnels rising from a front yard on Peterson Street. These are high tunnels for growing produce, and they were funded by a USDA program that hopes to see similar structures sprout throughout the U.S. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz took a look inside.
This month, Judy Johnstone plowed under the flower garden she'd cultivated for over 20 years. In its place, she erected a pair of unconventional structures. They look a little like...
like two very large igloos, 12 feet high, 24 feet long.
And 20 feet wide.
Covered in clear plastic.
These are high tunnels, low-tech alternatives to the conventional greenhouse. Plastic sheeting is stretched across steel ribs to create a shelter for vegetables planted in the ground. The high tunnels allow gardeners to stretch the growing season. Johnstone hopes to keep hers going year-round. Carrie McLean of the Sitka Local Foods Network helped build Johnstone's high tunnels.
Very simple structures, but if you step inside, you'll just see the difference between outside and inside.
Outside, it's about 59 degrees, but inside, it's a humid 75 or 80.
Just a few more degrees is what you need to produce food. Out there, it's just a little bit too cold for most of the things that we're used to eating.
Inside the high tunnel, rows of vibrant green starts poke out of furrows in the earth.
Here we have chard and broccoli and different brassicas, herbs, cilantro, onions, lettuce, things that can grow without protection, and some things that can't, like here are all tomatoes.
Johnstone's high tunnels are part of a USDA program in which the agency reimburses gardeners for the cost of building the tunnels. In most of the country, the program is designed to conserve soil and cut down on the use of water and fertilizer. But in Southeast Alaska, the program's major benefit is food.
It's pretty challenging to grow food in Alaska.
This is Samia Savelle, who manages the program from the Natural Resources Conservation Service in Juneau.
And definitely in Southeast, where, as everybody just experienced in May, we can have pretty cool temperatures and a lot of rain, and that limits the number and types of crops that you can grow, and certainly we have a short growing season, so I think the appeal is extending that growing season and giving people the opportunity to grow more of a variety of crops that might not otherwise be possible in our climate.
Johnstone and McLean say the program is perfect for Sitka, with its chilly summers, lack of farmland, and high food prices. High tunnels, they say, could be an excellent source of cheap local produce.
We don't want to add to the carbon footprint by flying all this lettuce and stuff in from Mexico. It's crazy. We can grow it here, and we should.
And the price of food has gone up 40% in the last 5 years in Sitka.
That's according to the Alaska Food Cost Survey, which found that the cost of food for a family of four in Sitka increased by nearly 44% between 2006 and 2011. That's compared to a 21% rise in Anchorage over the same 5 years. The deadline to apply for the USDA funding is this Friday, June 15th. The program does require some past horticultural experience.
You have to have some land and a desire, and you have to have grown something. They've really made it flexible for Alaska, so if you've grown a potted geranium on your front porch, you will qualify. That's farmer enough for Alaska. But you have to combine it with some other $1,000 worth of something that you've gotten from the land. So that could be sockeye or deer, or if you're further north, moose.
Johnstone is one of about 40 people in Southeast Alaska who have applied for the grant in the past 3 years. And she's looking forward to a productive season.
How much produce do you expect to grow this summer?
Lots. More, lots.
In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
You can find details on how to apply for the USDA's High Tunnel Program and photos of Judy Johnstone's high tunnels on our website, kcaw.org. Elected officials from Alaska want the U.S. Postal Service to do more to intercept shipments of illegal narcotics mailed to Juneau, Petersburg, and other Southeast Alaska communities. Senator Lisa Murkowski is among those seeking more postal inspectors or better cooperation with local, state, and federal law enforcement. Joe Picnicki reports.
In a June 8th letter to the Postmaster General, Murkowski writes the Postal Service has become a main conduit for drug trafficking in the Panhandle. She asks the Postal Service to take action to make sure the mail is not an avenue for narcotic shipments. The Republican senator suggests an agreement between the Postal Service and local law enforcement that would allow police officers in the communities to inspect the incoming mail. State Republican Representative Kathy Munoz of Juneau wrote to Murkowski and the rest of the congressional delegation last month asking them to pressure the Postal Service to assign a postal inspector to Southeast. Munoz writes the U.S. mail has become the primary source of heroin and methamphetamines in the capital city. Petersburg Police Chief Jim Agner agrees the Postal Service is the main source of illegal drug distribution, not just in Southeast, but nationwide. Agner says other agencies have made changes to make it harder to import drugs.
United Parcel Service, FedEx, those agencies allow drug investigators into their systems to be able to do drug investigations. So, you know, the one safe place is the post office right now.
Dave Schroeder, a public information representative for the service, says postal inspectors work hard to stop drug shipments through the mail. Schroeder would not discuss staffing levels in Alaska, but says there is more than one inspector working in the state.
Southeast Alaska is covered by postal inspectors, and our staffing, we feel, is sufficient. Could it improve? Absolutely.
He says the service arrested over 1,300 individuals nationwide in 2011 for drug trafficking, but did not have information about arrests in Alaska. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Cloudy skies today in Sitka, scattered showers, highs around 53, southwest winds 5 miles per hour. This is KCAW in Sitka.